It's Lars Larson. Thanks for listening to my podcast and for listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Lars.
Together, we can forge a new beginning for America.
The 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
Now, honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, the President of the United States is speaking at an Iowa rally tonight. He's taking a little bit of a victory lap after the two special elections that were held yesterday, including the big win for Karen Handel in Georgia. Let's take a listen into what the President's saying tonight.
Lots of things. Going to be reducing crime, and we're securing that Second Amendment. I told you about that. And that looks like it's in good shape with Judge Gorsuch. That looks like it's in good shape.
Oh, yeah, this crowd loves Donald Trump.
I'd like to also take this moment to send our thoughts and prayers to our courageous friend, somebody that I've gotten to know very well, Steve Scalise, and everyone recovering from the assault.
Donald Trump mentioning last week's attempted political assassination on Congressman Steve Scalise. Let's hope he does recover fully and quickly.
Never fails. Never fails.
I imagine there are a few protesters in the audience, and it sounds like they may be getting some attention tonight. Even now, after the president's been in office for months, there are still people out there trying to disrupt what he does. The women behind him holding up signs, "Women for Trump." Let's just take another moment of this, because he's very happy, and he should be, about the results of that special election in Georgia, about Ralph Norman's great victory in a special election. And, of course, the Democrats, who had said these were going to be litmus tests for the president, they're not talking that way anymore, because they thought they were going to win, just like they thought they were going to win last November. And when they didn't, CNN. Can you believe it?
And we love our police. We love our police.
Sounds like the police had to remove some people from this rally. This is the way that you go after a president. You don't let him do his job. You just try to interrupt his speeches.
So to Steve we say, and he's a great guy, was in my office the day before. Incredible. We're praying for you. We're pulling for you. You have our absolute support and our deepest admiration.
Donald Trump speaking live at a rally in Iowa tonight. Welcome to the Lars Larson Show, by the way. Last night, Georgia held its special election, and the loser, Democrat John Ossoff, spent nearly $9 million more than his opponent, Karen Handel. And now Ossoff is calling for campaign finance reform. Is he going to start with his own campaign? House Majority Whip Steve Scalise's condition has now been upgraded from critical to fair, and he continues to make good progress, beginning a long rehabilitation. And will the new sanctions on Russia and the mounting tension in Syria provoke a war with Russia? We'll talk about that, too. Comedian Adam Carolla is going to talk with me about his new movie called No Safe Spaces and the fact that Hollywood refused to help him make that movie, so he's going to appeal to the American public and do it by crowdfunding instead. And make sure to vote in tonight's quick poll. You'll find it at LarsLarson.com. And here's the way we frame the question. Was the attack last week at the GOP baseball practice an act of political terrorism? I would vote yes on that. It was an act of political terrorism as far as I'm concerned. Now, to your phone calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Terry is on the line from the great state of Texas. Terry, thanks for listening on KTSA. What's on your mind?
Good evening, Lars. I see the Democratic Party imploding from within. And on the other side, us real Americans, our job isn't over, because now we got the Republicans to deal with. They're going to sit back and say, well, you know, everyone's mad at the Democrats now. They can't believe anything they say. Nothing's credible. So now we're just going to keep getting reelected. Wrong. We got to get some independents in there. They're fired up patriots. You know, to put these Republicans on the ropes next.
I would like to see that happen. I would like to see Paul Ryan replaced as House Speaker. Now, that may be a bridge too far to go to, but I really think he's not doing an effective job right now. I'd apply that same description to Mitch McConnell, because those two leaders in the House and the Senate could be making a big difference. But I think you're right. The Democrats are imploding. They've got no plan. They've lost these four special elections to replace members who went to the Trump administration. And instead of Republicans saying, this is the time, we've got the mandate, it's very clear what the American public wants, they are instead standing in the way. And they're slow walking all of this stuff. It's the kind of thing that you would expect them to do to the other party. In this case, the Republican leadership is doing it to itself.
Yeah, they're not even doubling up for the knockout punch. I mean, they're just sitting there tapping them on the back of the head. You know, this is where you double up. You come up under the chin for the old total knockout, you know, and get on with business. Because you know what? Republicans, you're on notice, too. Don't think you've got it easy.
And by the way,
patriots like me are going to fight.
By the way, Terry, how often do you suppose it is that you and I and Michael Moore agree on something? This is amazing to me tonight. Documentary filmmaker and leftist activist Michael Moore took to Twitter today to express his frustration with the Democrat Party after the Ossoff loss to Republican Karen Handel. In a series of tweets, this guy, who is one of the creepiest individuals around, my own family has felt some of the backlash from some of his nonsense over the years. He said the Democrat Party, quote, has no idea how to win elections following the November election loss. If you think the party who's won the vote in six out of the last seven presidential votes but holds zero power and is now 0-4 in 2017 votes is going to win next year, get a frigging clue. I actually agree with Michael Moore tonight for a change.
The only thing the Democrats know how to do is raise money. You know, that's the only thing. Their solution is to throw money at everything. It's funny how they can raise millions of dollars to gain a seat that pays pennies, yet they can't feed the hungry.
Well, but that tells you their approach to all of it, Terry, because their approach in government is throw money at a problem. Don't see whether the money actually does what you intended it to do, but when it doesn't, just throw more money at it. That's not a solution that anybody in the private sector believes in.
Yeah, their little pork barrel's starting to crack open, and they're not going to be able to funnel off money to their, you know, to their private accounts. And you know, this is great. We need to keep up this revolution.
Well, and
you have a good night.
You as well. I'll let you go. And Terry, thanks for the call from Texas. Let's go to Stan in Mississippi. Hey, Stan, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. Thanks for listening on the Super Talk Network.
Thank you. Obamacare, you know, that was, how long has that been in effect?
About 5 years.
He got in 2008?
Yep. Well, he actually took office in 2009. It's been in effect for about 5 years. And yes, we need to get rid of it, although parts of it were held up by the very president who proposed it. Stan, I got to go. By the way, Harry's is all about a great shave at a fair price, which is why more than 3 million guys, including me, have switched over to Harry's. Now, I switched over a long time ago, but the story is instructive. Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys fed up with buying overpriced razors, started Harry's to fix shaving. They bought their own German factory to make the kind of razors they knew they needed to sell. And they had 100 years of blade-making experience, and all the products are backed by a 100% quality guarantee. They took a little less profit. They sold directly over the Internet. That's why Harry's blades are sold at half the regular price of the leading brands. And great news, Harry's is so confident you'll love their blades, they're giving you their trial set for free. You just cover the cost of shipping. Your trial set includes the Truman handle, the 5 precision-engineered blades with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, travel blade, blade cover, and post-shave balm. They've got it all. That's almost $20 in value. The offer is only available to my listeners if you use promo code Lars at Harry's.com when you check out. Go to Harry's.com, use the name Lars, and just pay for the cost of shipping. Try it out. You're going to love Harry's blades. That's Harry's.com, code word Lars. Get started with Harry's today.
The conversation continues at LarsLarson.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Your calls are welcome at 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. And with the tensions rising between the United States and Russia, especially over the subject of Syria, I've invited Ivan Eland, who is a senior fellow and director of the Center on Peace and Liberty at the Independent Institute, to join me tonight. Ivan, good to have you back on the program.
Thanks for having me back, Lars.
So where does this put us now? We've had to shoot down an aircraft, actually a Russian aircraft, but operated by Syrian pilots, and the Russians didn't like it very much. Are we headed for a full-blown war with Russia?
Well, let's hope not. We have a deconfliction arrangement with them. They have a hotline between the two sides so that they're supposed to keep their aircraft separate, so we don't go up against Russian aircraft. However, in this case, we shot down a Syrian aircraft who had been trying to bomb the rebels that we're supporting. There's a lot of people in the Congress and outside the Congress, Hillary Clinton, for instance, who were advocating, and some Republicans as well, who were advocating this no-fly zone. Well, of course, that would have immediately raised this problem of who's going to enforce it. And we would have to enforce it against Syrian and Russian aircraft. So that's one of the reasons that's never been adopted. This was just sort of bleeding into the territory. It's a very complex battlefield. It's a multi-sided civil war, and you have both sets of enemies that we have, ISIS and al-Qaeda on one hand versus Hezbollah, Iran, Iranian militias, and the Syrian government and Russia on the other side. So it's a rogue's gallery of people that are fighting each other. And the United States is trying to, in the middle of all that, the United States has been trying to support more moderate rebels, if we're really sure they're moderate. But the government says that they're moderate, so I guess that's what we have to assume. But so this is a problem because everybody's in everybody else's space, and ISIS is shrinking the space that they have, which is a good thing. But the problem is the Iranian militias are trying to go into that territory. So the next question, big looming question, is does the United States go against the Iranian militia and, of course, against Iran, and then maybe against Russia, which is Iran's and Syria's benefactor.
Yeah, because if we go up against the Iranian militia, do we run the risk not of being hit back by Iran, but by being hit back by Russia? Because Russia has a very cozy relationship with the Iranians. Would they let us just go after the Iranian militia and not respond to that?
No, I don't think they would. I don't think Iran or Russia would allow that. Certainly Iran wouldn't, and I think Russia probably wouldn't either, since all these militias are supporting the Syrian government, and Russia is supporting the Syrian government. So it's very interlocking and that sort of thing. But I think we have to pull back here. There's a reason that we haven't gotten more deeply involved in this conflict, only to fight ISIS so far. But as I say, when you start into a civil war like this, you can get dragged in if there's any sort of accident or incident. And there already have been incidents. That's what we're seeing now. And it's a little bit scary that it could escalate between a U.S.-Russian confrontation. After the U.S. shot down the Syrian plane, the Russians warned us that if the United States aircraft went west of the Euphrates River, which bisects Syria, that the U.S. could be targets. Now, the operative word is could be. They may track us, but I doubt if they would try to purposely shoot down a U.S. aircraft. That would cause a lot of problems. And, of course, our planes are probably superior to the Russians, and also our entire concept of operations and communications, our command and control, is vastly superior to the Russians. So, they have to be a little careful when they do that. But the question we really need to ask ourselves is Syria strategic to the United States? Should we just hit ISIS and get out? Because, perhaps this will end up as another quagmire like the Soviet Union had in Afghanistan. So you want to, have our own quagmire there, too. And, the problem is, even during the Cold War, we didn't have a lot of battlefields where U.S. and Russian forces were both flying and both active. You know, in Afghanistan, when the Soviets were there, we supported the Mujahideen. When we were in Vietnam, the Soviets supported the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong, but they never really, they didn't at least overtly have, you know, air traffic. Some of the, there were suspicions in Vietnam that some of the Vietnamese, North Vietnamese planes were manned by Russians. But of course, if they were shot down, the Russians couldn't say, hey, you shot down a Russian aircraft. So in, even in the Cold War, we didn't have, you know, blatant Russian and U.S. Interaction in the air like we have the potential for here. And we really have to ask ourselves, is Syria has been a traditional ally of Russia, and what's in it for the U.S., really, other than to get rid of ISIS, which Trump seems to want to do?
Well, I think an awful lot of Americans would like to see us get rid of ISIS as well. But is it an option to simply hit ISIS and then withdraw from the battlefield? And I guess with Russian backing, can we assume then that Assad wins over the rebels and ends up taking back control of his entire country? Or is that a bad assumption?
Well, I think Assad would definitely be the dominant force in Syria, but I don't really think he's got the forces or the capability to take the whole country. That's why he's got Iranian militias, Hezbollah, Iran itself has advisors in there, and of course the Russians are helping him. So there's still going to be a fighting there, and you know, the United States could still supply the rebels with forces if they wanted to, but I'm not sure active air power is the way to go on it. But, you know, I mean, the problem is with escalation, it's a very real possibility here, because if Syria decides it wants to bomb the moderate rebels, and they have every incentive to do that, they've been trying to do it the whole time we've been in there, because Assad wants to say, and I think the Russians want to say too, if they take out all the moderate rebels, then they get to say, well, it's either Al-Qaeda, ISIS, or Assad, right? Yeah, and therefore the world has to support Assad because the other side is so bad that even Assad looks good. So they have an incentive. The Syrians and the Russians do have an incentive to take out the rebels that we're supporting. So that's a problem, and that's what happened in this case. The Syrian aircraft were bombing our rebel positions, and therefore the U.S. shot down the Syrian aircraft.
So what happens if we say we're not going to back the more moderate rebels? Aren't we sending the same old message that we've made the mistake before of doing, which is where the United States says we'll come in and fight on the side that's right, and then once they become, you know, they expect that we will back them up, we leave them holding the bag and walk away, which it does not seem like it's worked well in the past.
Well, I think, you know, what we may want to do is to try to negotiate a partition of Syria, and I think we probably should have done that in Iraq. It's the most likely thing to stabilize the country. Let's give Assad part of Syria, you know, the spine over by the Mediterranean that is his stronghold. You can give, you know, the rebels part of it, and you can give the Kurds some of that. And, you know, the Turks aren't going to be happy about that, but then, you know, you bring in everybody and say, hey, listen, you know, we're going to keep fighting here for another 20 years unless we partition this country. And, you know, you might get some Russian agreement. They want Assad to stay in power somewhere. Yeah. And I think we've had this idea that we're going to make Assad go. Obama said, hey, we're going to make Assad go. And then, of course, de facto, he didn't do that. So and he really can't. So I think he'd probably have to a partition would be the best thing to do. And I think
Safe space for some of the people who have been displaced by the civil war. Ivan Eland is at the Independent Institute. He's the author of Partitioning for Peace. When we come back, thank you, Ivan. When we come back, we'll talk about artificial intelligence and massing the brain power of a number of people at once.
The Lars Larson Show. Got something to say? Call 866-HEY-LARS to join the conversation now.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'll get back to your phone call shortly at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. It is a real pleasure to welcome to the program Dr. Louis Rosenberg, who is not just a PhD, but the CEO of Unanimous Artificial Intelligence, featured in National Geographic Channel's Year Million. Dr. Rosenberg, thanks very much for taking the time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So tell me what swarm AI or swarm artificial intelligence is, because I haven't run into the term before.
Yeah, so swarm AI is based on a natural phenomena called swarm intelligence, which is nature's way of amplifying the intelligence of groups. And what nature does is form systems that allow groups of organisms to be smarter together than they could be on their own. And it's really the reason why birds form flocks and fish form schools and bees form swarms, because they do that to amplify their intelligence and make better decisions and are better able to survive. And so what swarm AI is a technique where we can do the same thing with people, where we use AI algorithms to combine the knowledge and wisdom and insights and intuition of groups of people to enable the group to form a swarm that will produce more accurate predictions, better decisions, basically allow the group to become an artificial expert by amplifying their collective intelligence.
I'm glad to hear it can be done, because, Doctor, I've always heard that people can be smart, but that crowds can be awfully stupid. From time to time, we've seen how crowds react to things versus the individuals within those crowds who actually are pretty smart people. But as crowds, they may not be as smart. Does it apply to humans as well as insects and animals?
Yeah. So part of it is how you aggregate the input from groups. And humans, very often when humans aggregate our opinions in kind of a mob mentality, then you're absolutely right. A mob can degrade the intelligence of a group and can behave worse than the individuals. If we model the process after the way natural systems do it, like birds and bees and fish, we can actually produce groups that amplify their intelligence constructively. And at Unanimous AI, we've done lots of research where we have groups of people do predictions together as a swarm, and they become much, much more accurate when they're working together as a system than any of the individuals would be on their own.
Is that because it rounds off the edges, that is, the extremes of opinion within that group of people, maybe sort of rounded off at the edges so that you don't get the wild swings of opinion on things?
It's part of it. What we do is, since we're using AI algorithms, we're really collecting as much information as we can in terms of diverse sets of knowledge and wisdom and just intuition that people have about things, and we're finding the solution that optimizes across all these opinions, and it absolutely does get rid of the extreme edges, but it also it also fills in the gaps in each other's knowledge. An example. Here's a concrete example. We were challenged by Newsweek to predict the Oscars, and that's a hard task. And so what we did was we formed a swarm of 50 people, and these 50 people were just average movie fans. And what we did was, first we asked them to predict the Oscars on their own, just as individuals, and they were 44% accurate, which isn't great, but it's hard to predict the Oscars. There's a lot of categories. Then we had them work together as a swarm, and this same group of 50 people jumped all the way up to 76% accurate.
Wow.
In predicting the Oscars. And we interviewed those people, and we said, well, how many of you have actually seen all the movies? None of them had seen all the movies. But they fill in the gaps in each other's knowledge, and the algorithms look for different levels of confidence and conviction and converge on the answer that optimizes their collective knowledge. And it allows a group to be significantly smarter together. And again, it's a process that was really inspired by nature. Nature figured out how to do this with other organisms, and with AI algorithms, we can give that same benefit to people, to allow groups of people to function like experts.
I'm talking to Dr. Louis Rosenberg, who you'll recognize from the Nat Geo series Year Million. He's also the CEO of Unanimous AI. So when Nat Geo proposes to try to show what it would like to be a human a million years in the future, are we that sure that we're going to be around a million years from now?
So it's a great question. And the six-part series from Nat Geo goes through, the future of humanity, looking first at the near future, 50 years, 100 years, a couple hundred years, and then they go out to the far future. And the word million, when they say year million, is more figurative than literal. They just mean the far future. It's not necessarily a million years, but the the expectation, and they interview lots and lots of experts, is that humans will be around in the far future, but we might be pretty different as our technology starts changing us over the next 100, 200 years. Now that we have the ability to modify our biology with editing genes, and we have the ability to interface with computers in deeper and deeper ways, the different visions that experts give in the Year Million show starts to have humanity looking pretty different when you get out further and further into the future.
Hey, Dr. Rosenberg, let me ask you this. You've given us an example of how these algorithms can work when you take an average group of movie watchers and an average task like predicting the Oscars. Does it also work with the real smart end of the spectrum? If we got 50 physicists together, could we maybe come up with a unified field theory that actually works and fills in all the gaps? If we got 50 cancer specialists together, could we come up with better cancer cures than each one of those 50 individually?
That's a great question. And the answer is yes. What we find when we build a swarm intelligence of a group of people is that the swarm will be smarter than the individuals on their own. And so if you start with average people, you will build an artificial expert. If you start with experts, you'll build an artificial super expert. And we've done experiments like that. In fact, we built a swarm of Mensa members.
And, oh wow!
And we ended up with a swarm that outperformed even the individual Mensa members. And so it definitely works that way. And it's a way to basically amplify the intelligence of any group, a group of experts, a group of novices, and what you find is that that group, when they function together as a system, will be smarter than those individuals on their own.
So, Doctor, let me ask you this. Does it scale up? In other words, if 50 people can predict the Oscars, I think, at the swarm rate of 74%, does that mean that 500 could get to 80% and 5,000 gets to some higher number? Or is there a peak, or is there a leveling off somewhere?
Yeah, that's another great question. And the answer is we don't yet know. We were doing the research now where we try bigger and bigger groups, and we've done groups of 50, 100, a couple hundred, and the groups get smarter. But we do see it tapering off at the larger end of the groups, and it could be the case that at a certain size you have a diminishing return. If we look to nature, and for example bees, bees make decisions all the time as swarms, but even though they have 10,000 bees in a colony, when they swarm to make a decision, they usually only use 300 or 400 bees in a decision-making process. So it could be that nature shows us that it doesn't scale up infinitely. That said, the Year Million show from Nat Geo contemplates this issue and looks to the future where you could imagine a future where groups of people are thinking together by the thousand, by the million, a billion people could potentially think together as an extreme super intelligence. And so that's definitely one of the theoretical possibilities in the far future, but it's still not proven yet that increasing the size will continually increase the intelligence.
Dr. Rosenberg, it's a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for taking part in that Nat Geo series, and we appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you.
You bet. Dr. Louis Rosenberg, the CEO of Unanimous AI. We'll be back in a moment with your calls at 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com.
Lars Larson, your dog in the fight.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and glad always to take your calls. We'll get to those a bit later at 866-439-5277. Imagine this. You're one of the most talented, creative guys out there and you want Hollywood to fund your movie. And Hollywood says, no, we're not going to do it. So you have to go out and get it done yourself. He is Adam Carolla. Comedian, podcaster, radio and TV host, author, actor, movie director, and a man of many talents, a real Renaissance man. Adam, it's good to have you back on the program.
Always great to be with you, Lars.
So your advice to President Trump is to buy some earbuds and put handle on the iPod?
Yeah, I was just doing an interview and last week, or even this week, it's all such a whirlwind because Prager and I have been out making the rounds. Dennis Prager, that is.
Good man.
Safe Spaces stock. Good man. A lot of wisdom. A Love the wisdom. Boy, it's something we don't talk about anymore is horse sense and wisdom. But I was just asked, this sort of out of the blue, what's your advice for Trump? And I said, put in the earbuds, crank up the classical music, and get to work. And I've felt like it's worked well in my own life. And I would advise that to everyone. I used to tell people that when they go, hey, the doctor wants me to take these medications because I'm depressed or I'm unhappy or I can't sleep or whatever. I said, put in the earbuds, put on the classical music, and hit the trail. And then get back to me in a month and tell me how you're doing.
Because your conclusion was, and I saw the comment you made, I think it's in Politico, that that otherwise he's going to be in a four-year-long or eight-year-long fight with HuffPo and the folks on the left who are going to do everything they can to flash that shiny object out there.
It's just going to be a perpetual distraction. He's just like a big-mouth bass and they're a lure, and it's never going to end. At a certain point, you just have to go down, and I'm going to work.
No, and you know, in some ways, this is where I most wish. I'm a fan of Donald Trump. I voted for him. I endorsed him. But I remember that when, you know, reporters and others would say something to President Reagan about what his critics were saying, and he'd say, well, there they go again. You know, it was his way of just essentially dismissing it and saying, yeah, but I'm going to keep on being a great president while they're off with their distractions. I'm just not going to be distracted by it.
It'd be nice. Obviously, he's not wired that way. And by the way, we're coming unwired as a society. I mean, I've never seen adults act more like children in my entire life. There was a decorum, there was a separation, there was everything between being a kid and being an adult when I was a kid, and somehow it's all been undone.
You know, in line with that, Adam, I was telling my producers this morning, I said, remember when you were in junior high and somebody would wear the wrong kind of jeans or, they wore Nikes instead of Adidas or they wore their baseball cap the wrong way and it became a big issue. Oh, my God. Or somebody's associating with the wrong person or the wrong crowd, and you're not with the cool kids anymore. And I see these memes like the one on Marco Rubio trying to give Ivanka Trump a hug. And the Twitter universe comes unglued that Ivanka was not as engaged in that hug as Marco Rubio was. And this is what we're talking about? Well, we've got North Korea building nuclear weapons and sending, dead Americans home?
I marvel at this all day, every day. And, maybe it's just my own narcissism. But when everybody gets their panties in the bunch over Cecil the Lion and they expect me to set myself on fire, I say, I don't care. I got kids. I got a mortgage. I feel bad for Cecil, but that's as far as I'm going with it. And it drives me insane that they just move on to the next thing, and the next thing is nothing. And there's so much. But I realized I interviewed the guy who's probably going to be the next governor of California, Gavin Newsom. And Gavin Newsom proudly boasted on my podcast that he liked working small to big. And I explained to him, I'm the exact opposite. And if you're a politician, I want you to start working on LA's traffic problem. And then we can get back to, at some point, when the schools are working, the potholes are filled, and every community is safe to go for a walk in the night with your child, then we can work on abolishing Columbus Day and replacing it with Indigenous Peoples Day. How about
hey,
that?
Adam, before we run out of time, I want you to tell my audience about No Safe Spaces, this movie that you want to make that Hollywood's refusing to fund, and how you're giving folks an opportunity to help you get it across the finish line.
Yeah, Dennis Prager is, I've always been a fan of his. And he never knew who I was, because why would he? Eventually, we became friends. We're the most two different people on the planet. You couldn't get a bigger chasm between us. But we love each other's sense of wisdom. And movie together about what's going on college campuses and the safe spaces and all the little snowflakes we're raising, and so we decided to do it, and we're doing a crowdfunding campaign because as we said, Hollywood would never make this movie. And you can go to nosafespaces.com and contribute. And they have lots of fun rewards.
Well, I was going to bring that up. You've got some cool tchotchkes for people who decide to give you even a little bit of money.
Yeah, so I think it starts at $10 and goes up to, you know, having drinks with me or smoking a cigar with Dennis Prager or whatever it is. But it's all there. And there's some really good little videos there, just two-minute-long videos. This is snippets from me and Dennis Prager speaking at Cal State Northridge a couple of months back. And if your audience wants to get an idea of our dynamic together, they should definitely encourage them to watch those very short videos, which are at nosafespaces.com. I think they'll like them.
Well, I've had the opportunity to smoke a cigar, too, with Dennis Prager when we've been at events together, and he's a great guy, and he's a wonderful conversationalist, and I can't imagine a better duo to make this whole project happen. Adam, congratulations for all your success, and I'll add a few dollars to the No Safe Spaces effort because I want you to get across that finish line.
Thanks, Lars. I appreciate it.
You bet. Adam Carolla with us. Glad to be with you. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's 866-439-5277. You can follow me on Twitter at Lars Larson Show, on Facebook at The Lars Larson Show. You can podcast the program from our SoundCloud account, and we always invite you to visit the website at LarsLarson.com.